This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We tape in the offices of Raider, which offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work. We understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd also like to thank Iberia Bank for its support. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered in Lafayette with 325 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit IberiaBank.com for more information. And lastly, thank you for the support of Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit, community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Frank Randall, owner of Randall's Restaurant and Seafood Processing, is our guest today. Secretary of the Gulf Seafood Foundation, Frank has also served on behalf of the Crawfish Processors Alliance, the Louisiana Restaurant Association, the Louisiana Seafood Promotion and Marketing Board, and the Petroleum Club of Lafayette, as well as many others that we'll get to. Frank is an iconic figure in Lafayette. Today, we'll celebrate his work in preserving the old-time Cajun dance hall and delicious Gulf seafood that Randall's is famous for. Celebrating his 49th year in the restaurant business, Randall's has been open at its Collie Saloon location for 40 years, and 9 years before that in Henderson, Louisiana. Many people may not realize that Frank's restaurant sits on property formerly known as the Long Plantation, which he inherited as a descendant of Della Marie Bio Beaulieu. Frank, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Lily Baltimore-ish, yeah. Good food, good music.
Yeah.
Let the good times roll. Yeah, it's really been good where I'm at, and it's really special to be able to be, I think I'm fourth generation on the land.
That's right. You know, we met through Chris Raider. I met you and really got to re-experience your crawfish with the delicious crawfish boils that you put on here for Raider and their friends. And I realized how little I knew about your family history once we started talking, Frank. I had no idea that you were a descendant of the Bios and the Beauliers, which are two, again, iconic families here in Lafayette. So would you tell us maybe just about where your restaurant is on Collie Saloon and how big the Long Plantation was back in its day?
We're going to give a little snippet first of the Randall. That's from Texas, San Antonio.
Okay.
Moved here when I was 6 years old. Long Plantation is actually 600 acres, and it was developed into three, what it was a working plantation, but on the inherited from the second generation, it was actually into three 200-acre tracks. My family, which is the Beaulieu side, is on 200 acres, and I'm sitting on just a little bit of a snippet of that, about 20 acres. So I've got five where I'm at and about 15 up by the Lourdes Hospital.
So 40 years ago, you made the decision to move your restaurant into Lafayette. What was Collie Saloon Road like 40 years ago?
They thought I was crazy. I'd gone out on a two-lane road. I'd set my restaurant so far off the road. They'd said, nobody's going to see you out here and you'll never make it. And it's sort of like today, they say, build it, they will come, fulfill the dreams.
Right. Yeah. Because people knew, I mean, they knew the work you've done with bands, they knew the quality of your food, but still Lafayette was different 40 years ago. It was booming, but not necessarily right there on Collie Saloon. So what a great... great investment that your family made way back.
Well, as we talked, I had different ways to make money. In the 80s when the actually the oil patch went down because I had my seafood processing plant, I could bridge that gap because I was shipping seafood to the East Coast up to Baltimore, and now we're shipping it up to Chicago. But, you know, when things soften, I just reach out a little bit. And we continue to grow. But in different areas, in really unique areas that you would never think.
Your story, in my mind, and I know you probably agree with this, it parallels our friend Jim Gosson. He was on the show, and I didn't realize you were also a pilot. So when you were in the military, is that? Or,
That's correct.
If I'm not misspeaking, you were flying as a young man, and that allowed you to get the seafood where it needed to go outside of Louisiana. You want to maybe touch on that, your early days?
Back it up just a little bit. Back in, I was born in 46. My dad was in the Civil Air Patrol, so he was a pilot. Mm-hmm. As soon as he get me up to the age, I was flying with my license at 16, as are my two, my first and second son, or 40, 42. They took it to another level. Yes, flying, and when I got went through college, that's in the 60s, so I went into the military, and I was an officer, but I didn't fly in the military, but I was already flying, and then I wound up getting an airplane and figuring out I'd fly instead of going into the family business, which was the insurance and real estate. So I was flying. I had a D-18, big twin beach, loaded with seafood, go to Baltimore, about 6 hours up, 6 hours down.
What did people think about the Cajun, you know, our seafood? I know that it was really later in the 70s and 80s when a lot of our Cajun culture became better known. What were you flying to the East Coast back then?
Crabs. We were bringing big crabs out of the Gulf of Mexico, and I put them in the airplane, but after a couple trips, I figured there's an easier way to do it, and I put it on Delta, and it was as much as 5,000 pounds a night that we would bring up there, so it was pretty good. Instead of putting sandbags in front of a DC-9 Lao, Delta would let me put it in Baton Rouge. I'd back my truck and stick it in the airplane, so they had to load the sandbags. It could make money bringing crabs to Baltimore.
That's a lot of ice and crabs, huh?
Yeah, we had the nickname before we started. We had our own place playing. When the crabs were coming up, they called Louisiana Crab Special. They always put us downwind of the tunnel.
So what made you decide to open your restaurant?
Well, as is anything, it always looks greener on the other side of the fence. So I said, well, you know, first I got into the crab business, and I got into the processing business, and I said, well, surely this has got to be an easier way, so I got into the restaurant business. Mm-hmm. And that was in the late 70s when I started that. But I continued all the other elements.
What did you serve at that point? Was it similar to what we see now today?
Ball crabs, steam crabs. And everybody said, you'll never make it just serving crabs. And I didn't think I was going to do it either, but that's what people do today. And today, they're just restaurants that serve nothing but crawfish.
Right.
And
right.
I serve it all. I said, man, why did I make it easier on myself and just do one thing?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we started with the diversified menu, so I stuck with it.
You know, back in the day, it seems like that Henderson area. I grew up in Baton Rouge, but we all knew that area where you were was really kind of a mecca for some great seafood restaurants. So was it real competitive back then? Like, what was it like a young man, you know?
I'm gonna back you up in time just a little bit. You know that we didn't have that that high rise going across the basin.
That's
my trip
true.
Was one on 190. I'd go up and across, but then finally we got the other one. But yes, there was nothing better than going out to the country, which is a 115 exit now. And you get there now, you can get up there for like in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of secluded. Surely from where you were in Baton Rouge, it was a long trek to get there.
Yeah, but I mean, it was worth it.
Well, it was. You had patched waterfronts, you had lasses, you had, Robans.
I mean,
it was almost like the Cajun Vegas, the Strip.
Right. So you moved to Lafayette, and I'm assuming the way the restaurant looks today is pretty much what it looked like when you opened. It's very rustic, and you're known for that dance hall, but the whole restaurant just has a comfortable family vibe, and it just evokes the Cajun spirit. How did you come up with that design?
Early funk, and it was cost effective. That greenhouse was very inexpensive. It goes up quick, and it's easy to refurbish. Every 5 years, we put another piece of visqueen up there.
And just keep on rolling, huh?
Yeah, and we've stood all the storms. Andrew, it just rocks and rolls. We had General Honoree inside the restaurant when that one came through, and Rita came through, and he couldn't understand how that we kept it going, because they had to break down at 40 mile an hour, and he was in there when we were hitting 90 mile an hour winds, and everything was rocking and rolling.
Right. And so you've got the, if people haven't been in there, there's a stand for the band, and I know you've redesigned the inside of the dance hall a few times, but basically it's a rustic dance hall look. And the part about the floor we were talking about earlier, you're on your fourth dance floor, but you tell me people get in there and they really do some stomping.
Yeah, they do.
Right?
And it's pretty unique. What I didn't tell you is that actually the dancers, I put the first floor in, the dancer did all the other three. They call it a crowbar party. They come out, they don't stop dancing, but they'd actually get up there and take the oak floor up. The first one was pine.
Oh.
Then we did the oak for the last three times, and they come out with their crowbars, and they take the floor up. It takes about 3 days to stack the wood, take the nails out while they're dancing. And the carpenters come back in and start putting... While they're dancing. The dance floor shrinks. And they just get smaller and smaller. And then they put it back together. Mm-hmm. They come back in. We bring some more wood in. And some of the stuff we could salvage. But most of the time, it was just... They called it a crowbar party. And if you go in there, you can take a look at some of this stuff. And it was pretty unique. When they did it the first time, I thought it was great because it was free. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to pay somebody to demo it. And I was able to use some of the stuff.
Right.
But crowbar party.
That's interesting. Yep. So you've got people coming in from itty-bitties to great-grandmothers, and you've got a multi-generational
More than one
dance
time.
Hall.
It was pointed out to me that some Europeans came in, some journalists came in and said, did I realize they had four generations on the floor? Mm-hmm. People from Germany, they said, that's like old time in Europe. Mm-hmm. And he pointed out the young one was like in his 10-year-old and the grandpa. Great-great-grandpa was out there, and he was 90-something, so we had four generations.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's what he said, yeah.
You get the best bands, I know, the best Cajun bands joining. Or not even just Cajun, right?
You understand, they pretty much all of them, that was a good venue because we also filmed Les Bon Temps Relais, mm-hmm. so that was a venue for them to actually get before a camera. And come together and do that, but it's not about the building. Surely, you know, it's so plain, but it's about the people that occupy it, and that's genuine Cajun. The facade on the bandstand is from the Basile Main Street in Basile, so okay. That's what that. Like, I went into the history books and I just had them do it. So it's almost like Disneyland, Cajun Disneyland.
It really is.
Yeah, you just put a facade out there, and it mm-hmm. but it's the people, yeah, and the people really like it, and. It's like that's the cruise control of the Cajuns that come in and enjoy it. Mm-hmm.
I was surprised when you told me that you don't charge for people to come in and dance. They can eat, of course, and I know you encourage that, but people can just walk in and join the fun without paying any charge.
That's correct. The only thing I changed was at the very beginning when they came in, they used to bring a little brown bag with a half pint in there. They had to stop doing that.
Uh-huh.
They'd buy a Coke, and that was it. But I said, that's got to stay out, but everything else to come in, and I'll keep it free if you just do that
right.
for me.
Right. Do you dance?
Yeah.
You do? You enjoy
yes.
it?
I try not to because a bus comes in. We have a lot of buses. There's 40 people on a bus. You dance with one. You mm-hmm. dance with all.
What percentage of our local population, I know you were telling me that you're really – not dependent on tourism, but tourism really keeps your restaurant going. What percentage do you think your clientele is from out of town?
Overall, day in and day out, 60% comes from out. And a large majority of that, it's French-speaking, almost all of it, and a lot of it is European.
Uh-huh.
I had one time, I had Ed Crampy. He's passed away with McDonald's.
Ed was a Cajun dancer?
No, he had the story.
I cannot picture that.
he couldn't figure out how I had that many people in this place.
Mm-hmm.
And when Chantal Doty said, it's because they know about me before they come in. The Frommers has me listed, and I'm a destination. They know they're coming to my place before they leave Europe.
Right.
And he started just goating me, man. He was on me, and they said, and Chantal Doty threw herself in front of me and said, and started in French. He gave him half French and half English, but he got the message. He said, I was telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And... Ed said, wow,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
He comes from that, I call myself, I have to respect what Ed was because he did a phenomenal job.
Loved Ed, yeah.
We just wanted things to be the way they were.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was about.
And you want to maintain that, right?
Yeah, and it's worked for us. You know, sometimes you say, well, it wasn't about making the money anymore. It was just, I'm in the give back now. But everybody says, how's business? 49 years.
Yeah. That kind of says everything.
Yeah.
I know you were on 60 Minutes. You were interviewed along with the Tabasco people. But Dr. Sanjay Gupta interviewed you. Would you want to talk?
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
We've been
blessed.
I did
some research.
Actually, Good Morning America was on the way. They were in Austin when their plane got, but they were coming to, we were all set up with Dupsy and everybody in the parking lot. But Sanjay Gupta, they called, and he came in. And that was pretty unique. because what we did, we knew they were, he was coming in, and we'd set up a nice shot for him. But he didn't quite understand it. What I'd put in front of him wasn't what he was going to eat. It was a camera shot. But he started in on it, and he said, "Look, it's good enough for me. I'll eat this." I said, "Well,
what was it?"
Crabs and crawfish and everything, but basically it was stuff that I'd done, and it was for a photo shot.
Right, right.
In fact, I still have a picture if you ever want to take a look at it. But we really had some neat, unique hot food for him to go with. Sanjay enjoyed it, and that was it. But
right.
We've had all kinds. I've had Robert Plant.
Really?
Robert Plant came in to hear the music. Terry Huval was playing that night.
Oh gosh!
And he came in and wanted to say, "Well, I'm gonna get up and sort of fit in." But I don't want anybody to notice me.
Well, how could they not, you know?
Exactly. You know, his head was through the top of the stage and everything else. And Dr. Bustani was way up in the front, and he was like a little kid shrieking and running in the back. But we must have had about 300 people that played this, and that was it. He wound up getting on the bandstand because he came in the back door, and he wound up, after three songs, he said he couldn't help it, so he had to get back up in there.
That's awesome.
Maybe about a year after that, we had, we just have so many of them come through. Mm-hmm. And I used to bring most of them, I bring to El Cidos on the backside of it because they're looking for Cajun, and what they're really looking for, like Robert Plant was looking for the beat of the Zydeco music, and he couldn't figure out how it was. They have to really come, they can hear it, but they're better off if they can see it because they don't know what did they do to make it that different.
Uh-huh.
And Cajun and Zydeco has its own genre. It you have to see it, and most of them enjoy it, and a lot of them incorporate it, because you remember that, I forgot the one where Beau Soleil backed in, I forgot what the female singer was, but she did put him in the deal with it.
I know who you're talking about. I could look it up, but yeah, there was an album with, I forget, but I know who you're talking about. Yeah, there was an album very, very off of the radar for Robert Plant, but yeah, really good.
No, this one was actually with Beau Soleil, with Robert, Michael Doucet.
Oh, really?
That's the one. I'm going to remember it before I get off.
Okay.
This.
Okay. Yeah.
You got to forgive me. I'm 73.
These are great memories.
That's right. It is.
Now, Terry Huval is an old friend of yours, and I know jambalaya is a standard at your restaurant.
Yeah. Terry's a story in himself. You know, everybody said, "Well, Terry's here." I said, he's an honors graduate from UL, and did all this stuff. Entergy was going to move him up and away from here, but Terry wasn't going to leave his roots, right. So he stayed here. And you got it out with
LUS.
Gulf. Yeah, yeah. Gulf.
Gulf at the
Gulf
time.
States.
Yeah.
And it moved over, and then I was, you know, he's been incredible.
Yeah.
He's a really good friend, and we've traveled a good bit I brought him up on the East Coast to take a look at what they were doing up there with music, with our Cajun music. I consider him to be a lifelong friend.
Yeah, you're lucky to be able to call him that. I'm a big fan of Terry's. You've not only had your restaurant, but the seafood processing is an important part of your business. And I'm fascinated with not only your foray into aquaculture, but your work, you know, for the industry. But if you can talk some about the processing end of your business and what that involves.
You know, at the beginning, it was all about, most people wanted to have the whole cooked or the whole live product. But you had to do something with what you couldn't use. You know, that's what you call the pick or the plant. And that's normally what they call a salvage operation. We started with that. We were hauling the live stuff up, and we had to do something with the other. But then today, fast forward, that was the one thing I could ever remember was that the value added, where we actually make stuff out of it, and we retail that stuff that we make out of it. But we had the other things where we had the touring and the other parts of the business. But no, that's what's kept the music alive. That's what kept us not having to charge. And very few people realize that the free music was actually a byproduct of me being able to take the profits that I was making out of state and keep those monies and keep the music flowing, because we when you go dark on one end of the business, you have to have a revenue point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess it kind of ebbs and flows throughout the year too, depending on what's
balances
going
out.
On. Yeah,
we stayed small. Uh-huh. And that's the key too. We made only one hiccup. We went to Shreveport and built the Taj Mahal of Cajun music in North Louisiana. Didn't.
Yeah.
I had 1 year up there, I was ready to come home.
That sounds like the Pasteurs I was telling you, their brief foray up there. Well, you've also on site, I think you said it was in partnership with UL, you've produced or grown, I don't know what the term is, Frank, but soft shell crabs. Mm-hmm. You talk about that.
Where'd you go to school?
LSU.
That's who it was with.
Oh, it was with LSU.
I remembered that. At my age, goodness. I remembered that. Yeah. Change your notes. No, okay. I was with Dr. Rutledge at the engineering department.
I didn't have notes on that, but I was fascinated.
They had an idea. They needed money, and I took their idea. Uh-huh. And so I gave them money, and they came, and they brought. We actually grew. We had a aquaculture. We duplicated the saltwater environment of the Gulf of Mexico where we could actually have these soft-shell crabs would develop right there on the property.
And right also, there on Collie Saloon, right.
Yeah, and it was a special filter they were manufacturing for the dairy industry. I think we talked to it, but that was there for over a decade.
And you actually provided soft-shell crabs for Las Vegas, right? For
the Bellagio.
Casinos, yeah.
The Bellagio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was something special, yeah. And we that was something that was unique because I was having lunch with George Graham and Odie Terry. The Eiffel had just opened, and my account out of Chicago was there, and they invited me to the opening, and I was eating in a restaurant called Olives in the Bellagio. They said they were out of soft-shell crabs. I said, I've got them. They said, no, our supplier said he don't have them. And Mr. Wynn, who owned all those.
Steve Wynn.
He had to have it. And I said, I can have them here tomorrow. And he barged me downstairs and slotted me in. I supplied them for almost 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And I had to ask you what slotted meant, and that's where you deal directly with the restaurant. You're not there's no middleman that goes between you.
Yeah, I'll make it real simple. They open the door that you got to come through.
Uh-huh.
They always lock it, and I was supposed to go through a union purveyor, and they were allowing me to come in with a little truck. There were 18-wheelers, and my guy would come in there with a gross 12 dozen. Every other day, supplying one restaurant, and I was slotted. You know, you have those special accounts you say you like to brag about.
That's one, huh?
The Bellagio is one of them.
I bet.
I have a lot of them, but the Bellagio was unique because of the way it got it. We got it over a meal right there in Vegas, and I had some of my best friends looking. Well, when I went from a casual environment to the shark tank.
Mm-hmm. Right, literally. So I love soft-shell crab, but there's really nothing better than crawfish. And I've been reading, we're here in early 2020, that crawfish, it's an early season, right? Are you serving a lot of crawfish? What are they like right now?
We saw it early when we started just before Thanksgiving, and crop is great. Mm-hmm. Every time, but you got to move around because, you know, the crawfish basically molt. When they molt, when they lose their shell, they don't eat. So you have a recess, but you got to be able to move to another area. So we start in the south, then we move a little bit higher, and then you just keep moving, staying mm-hmm. in to catch as best you can. And over the years, I've got enough contacts where I can get what I need. And it did end. You sort of sometimes you wind up in a basin with a wild caught. Right now, we're doing all farm raised.
You are.
Yeah.
In this area, is pretty much in South Louisiana.
I draw a bullseye. Like. Uh-huh. 30 miles around Lafayette, Louisiana. The bullseye.
You get everything you need.
All the seafood comes right there, all your processing plants, everything right there. Mm-hmm. And that was the deal I told you about UL with their connection with the Gulf Seafood Foundation, where we've got we're trying to get a bricks and mortar. We've got mm-hmm. the grant, $1 million grant for UL, hopefully to be the recipient of a lot of the money that'll come out of NOAA down to this area. But at the help of a lady named Carrie Castile, who's an alum, Dr. Carrie Castile, she's with the United States Trump appointer, USDA, Rural Development.
The USDA.
Yeah. And we had that. We have her and then the Meridian Group, which is, and then the Seafood Promotion Board was an integral part of getting that initial one. And we're hoping it's that first grant that's growing is housed in the Moody School of Business. LSU's still trying to. I keep throwing LSU back.
Yeah, no, they're trying two great schools.
They come back. Yeah, they keep coming. Well, how did they get that? Man, mesh out or no?
Yeah.
Actually, what they did, she came down here and he showed them everything. We took them on a gator hunt. They were going out, and they went in the gator hunt, and it was sort of locked everybody in. Not the hunt, but when the harvest, where they're hanging the gators and everything, and we were able to really show the lady with the Meridian Group. What it was like to see everything. So we got all that in, and they said, well, this looks like an industry that could use some oomph. But the foundation is the real thing. That's the whole Gulf of Mexico, all oysters, everything. And
you're talking about the Gulf? Seafood Foundation. I was about to ask you about that. Now, that is a cause very near and dear to your heart. I know you're a proponent of looking at aquaculture and anything we can do to preserve the seafood industry. I had Jim Gosson on, as I mentioned to you, and I wasn't aware that we've lost a lot of, you know, the natural growing seafood, and that without aquaculture, we really could lose our whole, our culture, the seafood industry. You want to talk about that, some of the work that you've been involved in, and maybe some of the challenges,
and I don't know if Jim told you, but, you know, when we have, like, oysters can't move.
Right.
So when they get knocked out, you have to go to one of the other, the east or the west coast to get what they call spats. A million spats is about the size of a volleyball. But you got to plant them. It takes a year for them to come out, but about a year and a half. But it's very, very costly. And, you know, they, so that, but that, everything starts on a reef. That's your estuary. That's where you grow the pattern. And then we, when we went, Lieutenant Governor brought me on a trip to Maine. And then that was incredible.
It's beautiful out there.
Yeah, and they have the salmon. They have the, they're the number one in the United States right now with, that diverse aquaculture, like 460 different things that they do up in that area. But we saw what they did, and it just sort of brought everything around to the point where, you know, it's about water quality. And so, you know, we're always fighting this thing down here, and we think about what happens coming down the Gulf of Mexico through the Mississippi River.
Right.
What is the impact? And that's where the foundation came from. I said, well, how can we help? Because we know there's something, and every time there was a national disaster, it was always land-based. Yet the water got hit, and they never declared a national disaster.
Right, for the people impacted.
This year, first time ever, Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser signed, and we actually got the president to go to sign a national disaster for seafood for the United States, first time ever. Nine states got on it at the end, and more are going to join in. But the importance of that is it allows us to get access to help. Different. It's not always grants and money. A lot of times it could be just a regulation that might put you back to the wall. One of those regulations is labor. We have a hard time getting our labor coming in because we have to use migrant labor. But in the 70s, it was Vietnamese. Right now, current, it's primarily the Mexicans will come in to help on a guest worker program, temporary labor.
It's HTB, and they're not cheap.
They're not cheap. We have to show that Americans don't want the jobs. But we help facilitate all that for the Gulf, and we educate. That's our thing now. Jim and I are advocates for that type of stuff. Jim is he's a great guy, and he's well known and well respected, and he's a good chair.
You know, for many of us, it's hard to imagine, you know, why do we need migrant workers? But on the other hand, who do you know that's going to work like that? You know, can you talk about that? I mean, you've told me that the industry couldn't go on.
I'm here today.
Without guest workers.
You're looking at it. My phone just told me that they're going to release another 69,000.
What does that mean?
I'm here today because I have no labor. My plant's sitting with no labor. Remember I said I keep the music open.
Right.
It was easy for me to keep the music open. We had labor. You know, the dancing going because the plant was open. My plant has been intermittent for the last 3 to 4 years. We don't know if we're going to have anybody. We don't know if we need to spend money on rebuilding or whatever, because if you don't have labor, you know, we can't fish it. We're just what we do is the tip. Meaning we catch the seafood, we bring it in, we process it, then it goes to the restaurants and everything else. One person that comes to help us will make jobs for four of the people in the process. And that's a fact.
We need that.
H2B. So, and that's pretty much what it is. But if we didn't have that, you wouldn't be able to have, you know, crawfish is a byproduct. Rice is a primary in crawfish. Mm-hmm. But it's not viable to have one without the other. But it takes a plant to be able to facilitate, and not only that, it takes HUAs. They're using them in the fields now. They can't get people to harvest, but it's an integral part. And look, we're at full employment right now. You know, the rest of the country's just doing extremely well, but at full employment, that should tell you something right there. But understand, when local labor is available, we have to hire them, and what we pay our people is above the wages that are paid here. Uh-huh. It's called prevailing wages. It's determined by the government.
So the 69,000 number that you mentioned, that's 69,000 migrant workers will be allowed to enter the United States.
Let me clarify it. 50 states, what's allowed is 66,000. Congress, out of the goodness of their heart, decided last year, because you have full employment, we're gonna try to give you a little relief on what's called the cap, 66,000. In 50 states, seafood only takes 2,000 of those. The rest of it's forestry, agriculture, and everything else. Mm-hmm. So you have all that, and they said, well, we're going to give you 69,000. But they sat on the 69,000, and today you had 66, yet, which is broken up into two halves. It's 33, October 1, 33,000, and 33,000 on April 1.
They have to go back after 6 months.
No, that's when you apply to bring them in. Okay. Takes you. It's a long process.
I'm asking too many questions, but I just don't know.
It's gonna get, I don't want to confuse everybody that's listening to this, but what it is they over double the amount of people, but then Department of Labor and Homeland Security decide, well, y'all might not have meant that you really needed it, so they wait till we hurt the most.
And then?
Well, as of yesterday, they said, looking at the numbers, we must be hurting the most because they have all these people in the backlog. We got 100,000 applications for 69,000. Uh-huh. Left, which means we're still going to have people won't have any labor this year for whatever they're doing. Sugar cane's in there also, the grinding mills and stuff. Gosh. Here. But we're talking about the ski resorts in Colorado. You're talking about the stuff on the East Coast, the in the resorts, the maids and stuff like that.
Right.
New Orleans, they use them. So, you know, it's we need the help. And but it's just in the cycle of 49 to 50 years, I've seen all this stuff correct itself. It's getting corrected right now.
You've made some trips up to Washington, D.C.,
yeah.
The Hill, right, on behalf of the industry.
Painful. Somebody got to do it.
What's that like?
Who's crazy enough to go to Washington, D.C. and stand in front of the guy that wants to put you in the dirt? They brought me up there, and I had testified against the Department of Labor.
You did?
Nobody goes up. Senate brought me up to testify. Senator Vitter brought me up. I testified against the Department of Labor, specifically on labor issues. Commissioner Strain was on my left. Another guy from one of the other states was on the right, and I was in the middle. And before I even got back home, they had somebody at my plant auditing me. They had already walked in.
That's like the IRS. You don't want to upset them.
Department of Labor, you know, they thought I was breaking the law, surely, because if I did this, they want to make sure I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. But, somebody had to do it.
And how did that come out?
I'm still trying to get my labor. The one thing you learn, look, till Donald Trump went up there and started draining the swamp, he didn't know that I was in that swamp somewhere. I'm not part of this problem, but I have seen the swamp. Uh-huh. And it pretty much resembles it up there, I think.
I wonder if President Trump likes seafood. He's more of a fast food guy, huh?
Yeah, you know, he uses HGB also. He uses them on his golf courses. So in his, they understand it. And on his his different problem. No, he understands it. But he likes to eat seafood, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think we sent him some gator boots. I don't know if he's wearing those yet. Yard dog.
Well, tell me about the TV show where people can watch. I looked it up online, but when did all that start? And it's really fun to watch the dancers and the different bands. But you want to talk about that?
Well, let's talk about the Jolie Blanc. Look at you. Have you been out on that dance floor?
No. I'm afraid I'd make a fool of myself. You think I could figure it out?
Everybody figures it out.
They do.
That's one thing I tell everybody. When you get out there and you Cajun dance, it's catchy. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the whole thing is you dance in a semicircle, but there's nobody. What my dance hall was modeled after is La Cage aux Chiens, the dog cage. And that's where back in the old days, the guys got in the bleachers and the ladies picked them out to go dance.
Ah.
La Cage aux Chiens, dog cage.
Huh.
They put barbed wire on the front of it because I don't know who was throwing what at whom, but
right.
That's
at
how
whom?
It was designed, and that's those bleachers that I had, those bandstands. Yeah. Uh-huh. But you can actually look this up, and that's what that's modeled after. So you have a lot of people go out there, and it's they go by themselves. It's family, mm-hmm. And like I say, it's anybody, but that's pretty much it. So there's nothing to really discuss other than history. You're talking well over 100 years, well over a century of something like that taking place.
Right. Where can they find like past episodes? I know it's on the internet, right?
YouTube. I think Delta Media is streaming some of the newer stuff, but we've got 35 years of it archived at UL now under the Louisiana Studies. That was one of our project. My project was to go back, and Terry helped me, is we put all this and archived it so the musicians anywhere in the world can take a look at and listen to it. And but that's it.
I'll have to come dance. I don't know. My husband just out of a sling, so maybe once he's, you know.
Yeah, Johnny got 2 feet.
Yeah, that's
two
true.
Left leg.
That's
what the heck?
You know, Terry Huval and his band Jambalaya actually donated a song to me for a TV show I did called Upper Lafayette on the Move when I work with the that Economic Development Foundation. And it was Hey Rock. And I just loved the sound of their music, you know. But I haven't gotten on the dance floor.
But you ought to hear Terry's got incredible vocals, not just Cajun. You know, he's
something
else.
He's got it, yeah.
I told him if I go before he goes, he's going to have to sing in church. Because I already heard him with a couple of, his fiddle, but the vocals, Ave Maria, he can't be beat. And it's just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Have we covered what you wanted to talk about? Have I asked you questions that let you share your story? Or is there anything, you know, it seems like over almost 50 years ago, you probably couldn't imagine what you'd learn over this lifetime.
What I learned, I was lucky enough to be born in the right place.
Yeah.
And look, I just got back. I spent 15 years in Hawaii, Maui. Now, that's the next best thing to Louisiana.
Is it?
Maui, South Shore. I'm telling you, man. Doesn't get any better than that. I was just talking to your sound guy. I'm telling you. But, you know, the Hawaiians think the same thing. If they weren't there, they'd like to be here. The food, the family atmosphere, it's very, very similar. There's a guy out in Hawaii, Willie Kay. He would do anything to come to Jazz Fest, and I'm going to try to get him here. And I tried to get Gert to bring him here to town at ACA to come to our festival.
That'd be great, huh? Yeah.
But it's just, it's incredible. It's paradise, no stress, but it's not home. And I'm absolutely know that I'm living in the right place. I married the right girl.
Yeah.
So I'm okay.
Yeah.
We're coming up, I think 47 years.
I have to tell myself, I got your wife and your sister. They're both named Kathy with a K, and I didn't really know either one, and I'm afraid I got them confused, but they were both kind and answered when I was trying to find you.
You were confusing me. But one of them finally got me. We went to John Foles is a good friend, and we were over there, and she said, there's someone calling his name Jan Swift. And I said, no, Kathy had told me, because then she connected, got the right one.
Yeah.
I'm glad you found me.
I am too. So we're here with Jason Sikora of Raider. And Jason, thank you for making our show so professional.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, and thank you for doing this. And thank you for bringing Frank on today. This is awesome. Well, I've known Frank for a couple years now because he provides Raider Solutions with some
exactly.
They really get
good.
Delicious.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So we bring clients down. We have some, employee appreciation things as well that we do and over at Raider's House. And I always see you over there. So thank you. Your crawfish is amazing. And for anybody listening that has been to Randall's, do yourself a favor and go get some boiled crawfish. I don't know what seasoning you're putting on there, but it's delicious.
And you don't get swollen fingers.
That's true. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I do carry around lots of paper towel in my back pockets, though. a couple other comments. To see you in front of the Senate, I saw it online today. It's C-SPAN 3. If you just do a look up for Frank, you can actually find the video of him testifying. It was fantastic. One of my questions is usually, being this is called Discover Lafayette, what brought you back to Lafayette after Hawaii? But I think you answered that perfectly. Food, family, community, and music. And that's really what Lafayette is all about. There's a reason we're one of the top, five happiest cities in the United States. I think that says it all. And yeah, Hawaii is beautiful. And maybe a nice little house in Lanai would be amazing, but Lafayette's pretty cool too. All right, so with all of these endeavors that you've gotten yourself into, how much time do you get to spend at the restaurant?
Well, you missed the thing about not having labor.
Yeah, so lots of time.
Yeah, I did it just like Jim Gosson. We started it all. I still drive a truck, but nobody does. I'm the one that gets in the slot, but I've shortened it. I only live about 3 miles from the restaurant.
Oh, okay.
So I'm pretty easy to get there. But actually, I normally pull the night shift when the plant's running. It's from 8 to 5.
Oh, okay.
8 at night to 5 in the morning.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's why you want to pick some crawfish at that time. Not too many people. They're bad. They won't pick it during the day, much less at night.
Yeah.
Because when it goes out, see, they finish at 5 o'clock. The garbage truck comes at 6 and it's gone. That's why everybody didn't, they don't see, smell, or whatever.
So you'll be on site if you need to be. Let me see those hands. Wow.
Those are some working hands.
Yeah. No, they look good.
I changed from golf to
there you go. Okay.
Driving a golf cart to driving a truck again.
My other question was, again, you've done so many things. Is there anything, any endeavors that you haven't got around to that you always wanted to do? You said you're on your last 30.
I'm a pilot. I was on a ski patrol when I was in the military. I've skied. I'm the kind of guy, if I want to do it, I'd do it. Yeah, that's pretty much the Cajun way.
That's a good way of looking at it, yeah. If you think of it, just go do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's how this podcast room came about.
I do crazy things, man. I jumped in the water. I saw that gator, but I jumped right back out. Then you got those other guys that jump in and stay in and wrestle them, not me.
Fair enough. Well, Frank, thanks again for being here and for stopping by Raider and sharing your story. And I'm looking forward to seeing you, I don't know, probably in about a month for another crawfish boil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
That's the best.
Thanks, Jen.
Thank you, Jason. Frank, you know, in the intro, I talked about the Petroleum Club, and I guess they're not really a competitor, but you're on the board, and I guess rotating off, but you've really given to a lot of causes, but you're helping. Is that a competitor? Is Petroleum Club somebody you look at as competition?
That's my wife. She was, in fact, it's Chris Raider. Raider called in an Ozzy.
Oh, yeah.
And then my wife, we had gotten married. That was where we had our wedding reception 40-some-odd years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's a rare commodity to have a restaurateur on
right,
that board.
Right, on another yeah, and, board that's competing with you.
And I jumped into it. They needed the help. But they needed another set of eyes on it. And I looped out and lassoed Jim Gosson because I said, well, you got to come help me because it's going to take two of us to. Because mm-hmm. if I say something, they don't believe me. If you say something, most of the time, he says he's not saying the same thing you're saying. But at the end of the day, we both come to a consensus because we both know at the end we can come up with something that's going to work.
Because you've both had that experience in the restaurant business.
100 years, 50 yeah. and 50.
Right.
Jim, like I say, it's we're not giving mm-hmm. back mode.
Well,
I put on 20 pounds in the last 3 months over there. I got to get away from it to try to get back
to fried food.
I go to Red Laurel's at 5 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. I said, why am I still gaining weight?
Well, I did want to put in a plug for the Petroleum Club because that's another iconic venue in Lafayette.
Coming up on 70 years.
Want to see that continue.
It's back. It's mm-hmm. phenomenal. I'm in the restaurant business, but I can tell you what they do. Everybody should enjoy it because there's only one place mm-hmm. like that mm-hmm. in this area.
It's a great venue.
Yeah.
For events and different things. So, well, Frank Randall, owner of Randall's Restaurant and Seafood Processing, it's been an honor having you on the show, and I've really enjoyed getting to know you better. Mm-hmm. I hope we
I don't
stay
I don't
in
always
touch.
Correct with someone, but I want to correct you one time. Je m'appelle François Beaulieu Randall. Frank Beaulieu Randall.
Right. Right. And it's hard for me to say that. Say Beaulieu again.
Yeah, but we got an intern in here. French intern. That was for her.
Carla Ewing is joining us today, a UL master's student in French. So, yeah.
Maybe was my pronunciation of my name adequate?
Yeah. I told him I've heard Beaulieu.
Mais oui.
Beaulieu, you know, but I'd always butcher it.
But I am a Beaulieu. My grandmother was a Beaulieu. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, a B.O.
B.O.
The B.O. B.O. sugar mill. And a Beaulieu.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And, you know, best wishes on continued success in this next third of your life. I'm looking forward to seeing great things. And thank you for all you've done for our seafood industry. And I want to thank our sponsors, too. We've got not only Raider that makes our show possible and Jason Sikora, but Iberia Bank and Lafayette General Health are very generous sponsors, so I thank them. Please visit our website at discoverlafayette.net. You can catch this podcast and all of our podcasts, or even better, go on your phone and subscribe. And I know Frank has a new phone. I'm going to get you to sign up for the podcast before you leave. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.